This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com and the director of the World Sweeping Association. And in this session, we'll be having a podcast with Michael Nawa. He was a longtime principal with Custom Maintenance Services, and that is just the tip of the iceberg with the effect that Michael has had on the power sweeping industry for many years. I will let him tell you how many years. This year at the National Pavement Expo 2020, he won the Alan Curtis Industry Service Award, and with that goes being installed into the Pavement Hall of Fame. And Michael is the second person in the industry to be put in that position, and I guess I should pat myself on the back to say I was the first. Michael has done just a lot of advocating for the power sweeping industry. He has been involved with the beginning associations that occurred really quite a long time ago. And I think between us, Michael, I don't think we could figure out how many years ago, but, you know, 20, 25 years ago, something like that, maybe more, the National Contract Sweepers Institute, and I think before that was the Contract Sweepers Institute.
Yeah, that was the first one.
That was the first one? Uh-huh. He served on the NAPSA board. He is a founding member and serves on the board of the World Sweeping Association. He's been on the board for the National Pavement Expo, and much more. He's received our Award of Excellence in Power Sweeping, and it's just much more. So Michael is now going into a new era where he is going to be doing some consulting with sweeping contractors, and other than that, I think doing whatever he wants to do, as he well-deservedly should. So with all that build up, Michael, you've got big shoes to fill, but the good news is they're yours. So talk to us about just a little bit about your background, and I think people would be interested in knowing the what went on in the earlier days of the sweeping industry with us trying to get associations put together that would be viable and that kind of thing. But go ahead, please. Michael Nawa. Drum roll, please.
No drum roll, please. I spent 44 years in the power sweeping industry. At the time, it really wasn't an industry. It was a line of work for many people. It was a part-time line of work for many people that I knew. My first truck was a 1976 Schwartz Mini American. It had a hand crank to raise and lower the head. It had no dumping, no curb room, no side blower. Just a head and a round tank with Dutch doors in the back, so he shoveled it out. It was primitive by today's standards, but better than a pan and broom by 1976 standards. My first business was a landscaping business, and as an add-on to that, I started sweeping. And by probably 82 or 84, it sold the landscape company and concentrated specifically on sweeping. The company grew and blossomed, I should say. It was a hard slog. In the beginning, I had banks tell me, trying to get a loan for things, and some of the answers were, no, we don't know why people would pay you to do this. And it was a very non-understood business by mainstream standards. They never see us do it. At the time, in the early 80s, very, very few places were open 24 hours. So we're out in the middle of the night taking care of things, and people don't even realize it was being done. The earliest association that I can remember was Contract Sweepers Institute, and it was started by, to the best of my memory, Bob Woltering had a big hand in that. He was the originator of the National Pavement Expo. And there was some guidance from the solid waste people. One of these associations was an adjunct or supported by the solid waste people, because by now they're sweeping roads and highways and bridges.
Let me break in to say, I think it's called the National Solid Waste Management Institute.
That might be it.
And they were willing to have a sweeping association kind of be added to them. But after that, they paid no attention to us whatsoever.
Correct.
Other than taking money.
They gave us our start. They patted us on the head and said, "Off you go."
And we'll take a cut, please.
That went. But I grew with the business. I cannot tell you the year, probably early 90s, mid 90s. I was at the NPE and I attended a seminar that was led by Harold Green of Chamberlain Contractors. And his seminar topic was diversifying your business. And instead of getting more sweeping customers, do more work for your existing sweeping customers. And the sweeping is not the primary part of that sentence. If you're a seal coater or a striper or a landscaper, the essence is getting more work from the customers you already have. It's much easier to sell your existing customer on a new service than it is to sell a new customer on a service. And with that, we started to diversify, started to add striping and eventually asphalt repairs and inside repairs, things like replacing ceiling tiles, cleaning windows of vacant stores, changing door locks from when somebody would move out to a shopping center master. And it turned into a whole utility type business. And it was all based on our sweeping customers. I don't believe we did much in the way of striping or any utility service for somebody who wasn't a sweeping customer. It was really about selling additional services to our existing customers.
And let me jump in here to say, for those who are newer to the industry, so you had these sweeping customers, but to get the sweeping customers, at the time, it wasn't a situation now, which is, who's doing your sweeping, try to find out what they're charging or, that kind of thing, or whether they're any good at it. It was selling the concept of having your parking lot swept.
Indeed, for the most part, our competition in the very beginning was the cart boy at the grocery store who was tasked with going out and picking up trash. It was very, very few people, as far as customers, understood the need and the benefits of sweeping. And at the time, unlike now, when it's a more environmentally conscious or responsible thing, at the time it was strictly appearance, strictly based on appearance. We pick up the trash, we blow off the cigarette butts off the sidewalks and out the corners, we vacuum everything up. And in being essentially environmentally responsible, we made the property look better. And that was the reason that people were having it done. Corporately, there was much less environmental consciousness in the 80s and 90s than there is now, in my opinion. Now you can sell the need based on what stormwater district you're in or what stream is nearby. But then it was all about beauty and all about appearance. And it was a harder sell. You might as well have been trying to sell them painting the building because they didn't think it needed it.
Right. Well, those were definitely early days, and people will look back at these days, I think, too, and call them early days when sweeping still isn't getting the recognition that it should as an environmental stormwater management process, first line of defense in keeping material out of the
stormwater systems,
and so forth. So,
and at some point, sweeping is going to be done by, 40 horsepower Roombas. They're just going to be out wandering the parking lot picking up trash. We won't be doing it. It'll be a mechanized type of thing that is not personally attended to, in my opinion.
Yeah, and
I live to see that, but.
Well, I suspect we may. One of the big topics now in grass mowing is Roombas, and there are contractors still around doing that. But what they're doing is going to the homeowner in large part and selling them on the service, and then taking the Roomba mower and just leaving it usually at the homeowners. It's fairly small,
and they come and deploy it.
And
there are several of those in my neighborhood.
Husqvarna
mowers.
Seems clear that that will be occurring in sweeping. What do you credit your success for in building your business through those years, in sweeping and in the rest of it?
I believe that I had a very strong passion for the business. I liked what I was doing. I liked, you know, finishing a job and presenting it as clean to whoever was coming in next. I stayed with it. I stayed dogged about it, but mostly I had a passion for what I was doing. I evangelized to anybody who would listen about the need, the way to do it, how to get it done, how to be efficient, and how the customers deserved to come and shop at a clean and well-maintained place. One of my great gripes over my entire career was the customer who sweeps twice a week and calls you in a panic and says, I need you to sweep tonight because the owner of the shopping center is coming tomorrow. I always wanted to say, no, let him see what the customer sees. Because if the owner comes in and it's clean and it's only being done twice a week because he knows what he's paying for, it'll never be three times a week or five times a week. It'll always just be twice a week. So,
agreed.
It was one of my pet peeves my entire career. And I never really did escape that. But having a passion for it, understanding that it was in the back of my head, it was doing some environmental good, understanding in the front of my head that I was making some money at it. I got, in my opinion, and I will say as evidenced by the Alan Curtis Industry Service Award, I believe I got respect in the industry I was in from the people who were in it with me. But I don't believe I've ever received that from Chamber of Commerce, the bank, anybody who I interact with even today doesn't know what I did for the last 40 years. They don't have a conception of it. And, well, that's okay. You know, you have to have a passion for it because it's not the kind of business that's going to make you famous or rich. But it can certainly provide a living that is worth having, in my opinion.
Well, and when you say rich, I mean, you live very comfortably now and on your retirement from selling your business, too. And you had a very comfortable lifestyle while having your business. But there are certainly some tough times. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. And I think a lot of people that get into the business of sweeping don't realize, they think, well, okay, I'll be out there at night sweeping, especially when they get started and they have to run their machine. But, you know, then you have to sell your customers by day and deal with complaints and fix your equipment and, you know, all of that. And getting above that, as you did long ago, to where you have operators and mechanics and so forth, that's really a key.
Yeah, there was a gentleman, again, who presented a seminar at the NPE, who many of us used as a consultant after that seminar, didn't turn out so well. But his primary point, which everybody accepted and made the transition to, was you have to work on your business, not in your business. Work on your company, not work in your company. When you do that, when you make that transition, either with guidance or with talking to other people about how they did it, it does make a change in your attitude. You can go from having three trucks to having 10 trucks. Should you be able to build the business, or should you have the geography for that? Because you've built a system with the three trucks, not to have to be out there doing it. And once you have a system in place, the system can grow, scale up. With the number of trucks and customers and things like that. And I want to further say that part of the things I'm telling people now is, and part of one of the things I learned, especially from Harold Green, is that sweeping is not an end. It's not the only business you can be in, because your competitors will do just about anything, competitors being me, in the past, will do whatever it takes to make the customer stay a customer. There are customers you can't do that with. There are many shopping center real estate investment trusts that are basically just the properties are just numbers on a spreadsheet. So if they can find somebody to do it for $2 less, it doesn't matter about your adjunct services. They can save dollars a week. You're out of there. So finding the right customer and finding customers who appreciate what you do, appreciate their properties enough to do that are harder to find. And even now in this market, even harder to find. But they're out there. And I will say that I didn't do work for everybody in the market. I did work for the people that I wanted to work for. And I was very grateful when those people bought a new shopping center, as opposed to people I didn't work for buying or building another shopping center. Because some people that are, other companies are far more suited to work with than me.
And you now are willing to consult with sweeping contractors around the country. I know that you are a mentor for, have been a mentor for a number of contractors in the World Sweeping Association. You're kind of had agreed to be our go-to guy. So if somebody's listening to this and they're a member of the World Sweeping Association especially, and would like to you know, consult with Michael further, we can certainly set that up. But for the kind of open market of contract sweepers, you'll be setting that up to where you'll teach them the kinds of things that they need to grow. Could you give us more of an overview on what you think those types of things are that you can provide details as a consultant about?
Well, I believe I have a fairly broad level of experience. It doesn't go way into the weeds on many individual topics, but as a broad generalization, I have a great deal of experience in marketing, a fair amount of experience in routing efficiently without using a program to do it. I have found that when my staff was intact prior to the sale of the company, we could route our trucks. We had 18 in operation on any given night when this company was sold. We could route the trucks much better without using the computer, because the computer, unless you told it what to account for, it didn't account for things you didn't tell it to account for, so you had to know what to tell it. Well, if you know what to tell it, you might as well just do it yourself. We found that to be very beneficial for us. So routing, dealing with noise ordinances, dealing with where to dump, employee issues. I will tell you the great weakness in my entire career was hiring the right people. I made several 6-10 great hires over my career, and probably 40 bad decisions. I was generally not very well versed in trying to determine whether the person in front of me wanted a career or a job or a paycheck, and I had to leave that to others. I had to leave that to an HR person. Even in custom maintenance services, we had an HR person who did the ads, did the hiring, did the interviewing. I stayed away from it because I wasn't any good at it. So most things sweeping, and you know, then once you have a customer or two or three, through my mentorship with contractors at World Sweeping, I've had some successes. I've had some people that have moved on and sold their company and moved on to other things. I've had some people who gave up. And I have some people that are still in business who touch base, you know, every 2 months or so, or I reach out every 2 or 3 months if I don't hear from them to make sure things are going well. And they're cruising along and they're doing quite nicely. And then there are people that I still would like to talk to that have asked me for advice and at the show. And I try to give as much as I can in the 20, 30, 40 minutes to an hour that they have or that I have. But if I could, you know, stretch out a little bit more and formalize that a little bit, and whether I can visit with the contractor and see what's going on, whether it would be a phone consultation, just taking an hour or two on the phone to find out what's going on. You know, if you have margin questions, if you have sales questions, if you have routing questions, truck questions, you know, what equipment to buy, I do have fairly strong opinions on the equipment, so I don't have a very well-rounded experience with the equipment. I've used pretty much one person's vehicles my entire career, and that would be my preference if I'm recommending something.
Some reasons for that. You're certainly familiar with all of the brands.
I am familiar with all the brands and the people who make them, and not all the brands. I mean, there's some trucks at the show that I saw that, you know, they were new to me, or they're new in the business 2 or 3 years of manufacture. I don't know them well. I would not want to dissuade you from buying one because I don't know those trucks. But I certainly can tell you far more about the trucks that I used than I can about many of the things that are on the market now. But, you know, I can tell you what to look for. But I think most people that I find in the industry, there's a gentleman in my market who got started 2 years ago. I think I met him 2 years ago at the NPE. He's not that far from where my office, where the people who bought me's office is. And he started in the sweeping business, and he went out and bought a brand new Timco 435. A beautiful truck, but that's an expensive piece of equipment to start a business with. I see him today, 2 years later, I see that truck on the road, you know, going here and there. So I haven't talked to him. I don't know, maybe because he's in my market, he doesn't want to engage. But that would not be my first recommendation for sweeping parking lots. That's a great truck. But if you're going to, well, we'll edit that out.
Well, and not just the Timco 435, but just that class of machine is an upper-class machine. You can, and it's like a Schwartz A4000 as an example.
Yeah, you can do many things with it.
You can.
But if you're starting with parking lots, start with something smaller and more affordable.
Exactly. And not only more affordable to buy, but more affordable to operate.
To run, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, I have a fair amount of experience over the 40 years in advocating for sweeping. And in those 40 years, there's not 44, technically, there's not one of them that I didn't learn something. And, you know, as the older I get, the more people point out to me that there are things I already know that I don't realize I know. But there's a lot of experience in my head. And there's probably things that a prospective sweeping contractor or an existing sweeping contractor is running into that I've seen before. And that's the best advice you can get, is somebody who's seen this problem before and how they handled it or what it did to them. So that maybe you can be more advised of what's coming down the road to you.
I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt who said to learn from others, because we don't live long enough to make all the mistakes ourselves. And that's kind of what you're saying, is you can have access to mistakes that have gone before. And, of course, through the years, you and I both have heard many mistakes that contractors have made that have been, in some cases, fatal to their businesses, too.
Yeah, and I have made nearly fatal mistakes. I have made mistakes where my bank thought that I was going to file for bankruptcy. He said, you know, 9 out of 10 people in your situation would have filed for bankruptcy. I said, I don't need to. I made a mistake. I will fix the mistake. And I fixed the mistake. Didn't file for bankruptcy. And it was, you know, it was an overcomable problem. But I had to go through it in order to do it. But I wasn't going to bail on my business. At the time, I had strong personal thoughts about bankruptcy, and it just wasn't a solution I wanted to take. So those are things that, you know, I have hundreds of mistakes I've made. Some were inconvenient, some were very nearly fatal, and, you know, the very bad ones, I had great employees, I had great staff, I had great customers, and, you know, when you go through the hard times, I've had people whose buildings have burned down. They've lost their vehicles. And, you know, the best I can do is, I've got a spare truck. I can send this to you for, you know, 3-4 weeks until your insurance kicks in. You get something new. But I can't help you other than that. And I've done that. I've done things for contractors all over the country. And it's the industry that has treated me very well, and I would like the other people in it to be treated very well by it as well.
Very nice, Michael. And we'll have contact information how people can reach you if they choose to do that, with our interview, where this interview will be located. Is there anything else we should talk about that you'd like to bring out? Any other positives or negatives or just thoughts about things?
No, I have lots of thoughts. We have had conversations, you and I, in various times on the phone and in person over the years, and you know, those thoughts are still floating around in my head, and there's any number of subjects I would be happy to converse on business-wise. Somebody who would like to call and chat, happy to offer some advice and do some consulting, but until I have a specific problem thrown at me, I don't know if there's anything else I want to chat about.
Well, all right. And I want to say congratulations again for your award of the Alan Curtis Industry Service Award. Having won that the year previous, I really recognize what that means. It's a wonderful honor. It really...
It is a very humbling thing.
It is a humbling thing. I agree completely. Yes. It's one of those knock you over with a feather kind of things when you find out about it, but... you know, I would think that the roles should have been reversed where you should have been the first. So that's just, as far as I'm concerned, that's it. But I'll take it how it is, and we can both put that we're on the Pavement Hall of Fame, you know, on our email signature files. I guess that's where we go from here. So. Well, thanks. Again, we've been talking to Michael Nawa, and for 44 years, Michael was a sweeping contractor and did a variety of side services. He has been a consultant to a number of people through the World Sweeping Association and is willing to do that elsewhere as well. I really encourage anyone who's looking to grow their business to give Michael a call and, you know, just chat with him. It's not going to cost you anything, and you can figure out, you know, what your problems maybe are, and even if you don't quite know what they are, but you just know you're not achieving what you'd like to achieve, I think Michael can help you with that as well. So thank you very much, and why don't you put your contact information at the back of this podcast too, Michael, if you would.
All right. My phone number is 717-440-2320. That's my cell phone. It's always on. And don't be worried about the time difference. If you're in a different time zone, I'm generally a sleepless person. My email is mnawa, first initial, last name, mnawa, at comcast.net. And you can send me an email. I don't have a web page. I'm not really social media proficient, so you can hit me on that. I do have a LinkedIn profile, but I don't use it very much. But feel free to send me an email, give me a call, send me a text. Happy to talk to anybody.
Well, thank you, Michael, and wishing you a good day, and I appreciate your willingness to help the industry, which has always been there as far as I've ever seen, and you've been in the industry a decade longer than I have, so. You were a rising star when I first got in it with wet behind both ears. So,
well, thank you, Ranger. Thank you for the call.
All right. You too.